I had to remind myself, like, hey, I was happy drawing and coming up with my own characters when I was like 8 years old or whatever, and I wasn't even working for a studio. I want that back. That's the feeling I want back. And then when I work on my comic, that's where I'm at.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is storyboard artist and director, Brianne Druhard. Brianne is one of those artists that, like, is an animation artist. Not only does she do storyboards and she's directed for companies like Cartoon Network, Marvel, Sony, Disney, Warner Brothers Animation, and Nickelodeon, she's also contributed character design and directed, designed, and produced the Amethyst Princess of Gemworld shorts for Warner Brothers Animation. And she's has this amazing webcomic called Harpy G, showcasing a brave elf's adventures in a small town full of secrets, new friends, and misunderstood monsters, which was also made into an animated pilot that you can see online. She's done so much. In today's episode, we take a deep dive into, you know, your self-worth, putting yourself so into the job, and how you can find separation between self and craft, creativity and life outside of work, how she adapted to being a supervisor and remembering that your people have lives outside of work, so you need to be considerate of them. We talk motivation, schedules, pre-planning, and some improvements she'd like to see in the industry. Talk about a lot, not gonna lie. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, I am Brianne Druhard. I work in TV animation as a storyboard artist, sometimes a character designer, sometimes a director. And I really like animation because it's really cool to see drawings move, and I get to tell stories with like another team of people. And the collaborative effort that takes place in animation is just really cool. So,
yeah, the ideal mindset for being in animation is what you have. That's great. I'm so excited to talk to you because you have done all of these things. And I think the audience will really love to see, like, how you become someone who does design and storyboard and, like, you direct, you've been a supervisor, and you've been in development. Because I feel like we all kind of, well, I won't say all, but a lot of people do go into, you know, film and animation wanting to tell stories. But for so much of that time, you're usually working on someone else's story. So we'll dive into all of this very shortly. But to get going, I would love to hear kind of your origin story. Like, when did you realize this could be a job?
Oh, yeah, realizing when this could be a job. I guess, you know what? It probably was one of the, like, Wonderful World of Disney specials that they would keep re-airing on Disney Channel that were probably from the 60s or 50s. And him showing, like, you know, animators at their desks, you know, and, like, the process and everything. I think that's when I realized it was, like, an actual job. Like, I understood that, like, even though I was young, like, the characters that were moving weren't necessarily real, but, like, just the idea that, like, that is something you can do is just really, really enticing.
Yeah, for sure. I loved those. And come to find out, the more I've, like, read up on, like, Disney history and stuff like that, that was all, like, promotion for movies, for the parks. Because if people don't know what you're doing, they can't be excited about it and give you money for those things. So I love that it also has this benefit, you know, to showing people that they could work in these places too.
Yeah.
How did you, like, did you go to school for animation or film? Like, how did you ultimately learn it and then break into the industry?
I did go to school for it. I went to, I think the first time I, like, did any sort of, like, actual real schooling for it was, I think maybe my freshman year in high school. My parents found, this week-long animation workshop that was actually in Washington, D.C. So my mom and I and a family friend, we went on a trip for a week over there, and you know, we used it like also as like tourism. Like we went and looked at all, you know, the landmarks and museums and stuff. And then during like the day, which was like, you know, like almost like a normal school day, I think it was like from like 10 in the morning to like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I would go to the children's museum that they had there, and they actually had like some animation set up there. I think it was donated by Chuck Jones or something, or they had a mural from Chuck Jones in there. And I think the teacher was Willie Hayes, and I've actually kind of tried to look him up online. I can never find him, but he was really cool, and he was really hands-on. There was like only 4 other people in the class, and we just played with claymation, and we painted cells a little bit. We did some 2D stuff. It was very chill. I mean, it was like funny because I don't know, chilly Willie, but that was probably the first time I got to be hands-on with it for real. And like, this is before like, you know, there was like Flash or Adobe Animate or Toon Boom. Like this is, I want to say 94, 95, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, now that we have access to a lot of that stuff, and that was really cool. And then the following summer, I was able to get into CESA, which is California State Summer School for the Arts. And I'm from Washington State. So as an out-of-state person, they only accept like so many people out of state. So I went to CESA for a month, and that's also very hands-on. They have assignments. Some of the teachers are teachers that work, you know, at different, some of them work at CalArts, you know, regularly, you know, through the year. And some are like USC and all that stuff. So I did CESA. It was called InterSpark for a while, and I think they changed it back to CESA. I really recommend any younger people like looking into that as a program. I'm sure it's changed, but I don't know. It seems like it's still like going strong. And it's not just for animation. Like you basically apply for, there's different studies and that's your focus. So I was in the animation part, but they also have a film and video. They have a theater, they have acting, they have fine arts, and I think writing or creative writing. So, it's a really good and strong program. So I did a lot of the assignments in there. They also would take us on weekends for studio tours. Like we got to tour, you know, I think Deke and like Disney were like the big ones.
Yeah.
And then there's also like, you know, there's like one day where they take us to like a beach or something. But most of the time you're doing, you know, classwork. And I met who ended up becoming some of my teachers at CalArts, but Corny Cole was one of my mentors during CESA. And then, you know, he kind of told me like what to do to help apply for CalArts and stuff. And Christine Panushka, who's, she used to be part of experimental at CalArts. And I've just worked on my portfolio during high school and then applied and ended up going to CalArts right after high school graduation. So I guess like during most of my high school years, I was still like, you know, drawing and learning and taking lots of figure drawing. And, it was a lot because like I live kind of like grew up in kind of like the middle of nowhere. So like the closest figure drawing class was like Spokane, Washington, which was like 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. So we'd usually drive up there. It was like during the summer, but, my mom and I would drive up like once a week, you know, and just made it like a thing. So we'd go and then do that. And then grab tacos and then drive back.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, so, it was nice.
One of your social media handles is Potato Farm Girl. Did you live on a potato farm?
Yeah, sort of. My dad, he farms potatoes. Like, I mean, he farms other crops, but potatoes are his main mm-hmm. food crop. He really likes what he does. Like, he loves growing potatoes. So I guess I know more useless potato facts than people who aren't on potatoes. But yeah, I think I grabbed that handle early on. Like when Blogger was like still a thing or was starting to be a big thing. And I think I was trying to think of a name that wasn't directly art related. And then it's really silly. And it's, you know, I try to use my actual full name when I have new social media handles. But the reason I have girl on there was every time around the time when I graduated college, every time I get an interview or go in, like, you know, for a job, they would be surprised that I wasn't a man. So back then, I think that's when everybody kept reading Brianne as Brian. So yeah, and like, I don't know if it, I mean, honestly, I don't know if it really gave me an advantage to getting interviews or not. In the end, I don't, any of the jobs I got weren't because of that. Like the people, the first full-time job I had, it, that wasn't the case. Like they understood how to pronounce my name and figured out before I met with them. But that was why I had girl in the blogspot title, was that when I would, back then when I would do conventions or have like freelance interviews and stuff, they'd be like, oh, you're a girl, which I always thought was kind of funny, not to be stereotypical, like people can draw whatever they want. But back then, like, not everybody was posting like unicorn art and I don't know. I can draw in a range of stuff. Like I worked on superhero shows and had to draw monsters and like metal things breaking apart and things. Like I can do that stuff too. But I just always thought it was kind of funny. Like not in like a mean way, just you know, I think they were expecting like some big burly guy to come in and they'd be like, oh,
I'd be like, what, it's kind of mind-blowing, you know?
Yeah,
it's
like, so, okay. Yeah, so that's the silly reason why it's girl is in there. Like now I wouldn't do that, but yeah, that's why it's Potato Farm Girl, because I wanted my screen name to be something that wasn't directly art or animation related, even though I was just posting art, because the blogger was mostly just for my friends and family back home to see what I was up to. So yeah, so that's why I didn't use my name straight out. Also back then, you know, it was very like not good to be using your name. I mean, I still think you need to be careful with that stuff, but
yeah,
anyway,
but yeah, you're also now your own brand, which is probably why you're using your full name, right?
Yeah, I'm Brand Drew Hard now, so
so you know, it's cool that you brought up the blogger and how you started it. You started posting online mostly for friends and family to see what you're up to. So like when you started gathering an audience who just liked you for your art, who didn't know you, how did that feel?
I guess it was interesting. I think it was like, it happened so slowly. I didn't really, you know, I think I still have like trouble, like thinking about that when I post stuff online, like a bunch of people are seeing it. I think like I post a photo of my cat online, I'm like, these are for, you know, I think he's cute, I want everyone to see how cute he is. So I don't know. I sometimes I'm just like, oh God, there's too many people and I need to delete things. But yeah, I think it happened like slowly enough that it didn't really hit. And it's, I mean, it still hasn't, because it's like, you know, when you work for studios, like we're, I don't mean this in like a bad way, but I mean, we are just kind of like part of a machine. Like, you know, like I've definitely like, I think every voice matters like on a team, but in the end of the day, we're all like making, you know, for TV, like we're just making like an episode to go to air. And you know, our stuff needs to like at least work, like our artwork and our job titles, like they need to work well together. But yeah, so I guess it's like, I'm aware that there's people who follow my work online, but as far as like the day job, I'm aware that that doesn't like cross over necessarily. Cause you know, in the day when you're doing a job, like no one's going to care how many people are following your work and stuff. So I wouldn't, it's kind of weird. Like I don't necessarily think of myself like as a brand. I just have things that I like to do. And I think it's really cool that there's people out there that like my work enough to follow it. And are supportive of it. And yeah, those people are really, they don't need to like my stuff, but it's really cool that they do, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And like I only use brand as like a loose, like quick description.
Yeah,
because obviously it's not intentional, you didn't like build this purposeful, but like you do have things that you clearly love to draw, you know. And you have a style that you've cultivated over the years for yourself, and then you can adapt to other styles for the shows that you work on too. So I think, I don't know, I think it's just incredible that like out of like a slew of artwork online, I can always pick yours out. And I've always loved that about your work. Well, I've loved more than that about your work, but I just really love that it's very, very you, you know?
Oh yeah, I mean, I mean, like, yeah, when I'm working on a show, like, I'm definitely gonna try to mesh with what other people are doing on the show, or at least, you know, make sure it's something that's usable. Like when I do boards, I think it's kind of, some people can tell what is my drawings and which isn't. And that's not always the case. I actually, like, I mean, you know, we're kind of like in a work slump animation wise right now. So I haven't worked in probably since October, but, in my last job, they were kind of aware of what stuff was mine, but, I actually had I've had jobs, more than one job. Like, it's been probably half that when I draw stuff, people don't always know which drawings are mine. So I'm always kind of like, it's always nice. I mean, when it's a good thing, it's always nice to hear, like, when people are like, oh yeah, I can point out which ones were yours. It's
a thumbprint sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I like, personally, I like being on shows where I can tell who drew what. I mean, it's kind of fun for me. It's kind of like when growing up and, like, you're watching an episode of, like, you know, you're watching a series, an animated series, and you're like, oh, this studio animated this, or this studio has, like, this is their earmarks. Like, this is how they time things, or this is how they, you know, break down a character and stuff. Like, nobody really draws exactly the same. And I actually really like seeing people's fingerprints. Yeah. I don't know.
Me too.
It brings, it's an extra level of life that sometimes people forget about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one thing I really have loved about stop motion too, especially before we got into, like, the heavy CG hybrid of stop motion. Because, like, I thought it was really cool that we got to see the animator's fingerprints on, like, Wallace and Gromit, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So what was the job that you broke into the industry with? Like, what was your first gig?
My first, like, I mean, I worked in video games for about a year straight out of college. And then I spent almost a year just doing a lot of different, like, small freelance gigs. And then the first full-time job I got was as a character designer on the early 2000s Teen Titans. I think I started working on that show maybe early 2004. Sometimes I think it was 2003. But it probably was early 2004 because I would have still been 23 then. So yeah, I was like a baby, but working with that crew was, like, really good for me. And, like, luckily from working the video game job, I was aware that, like, how lucky I was to be on that show, just in general, like, not just any show, but that one particularly, because all the alumni on that show who'd been on that, because I think I started, like, on season, I think I might have worked on the last episode of season two, like, I might have helped a little bit on it, but season three was, I pretty much just started on the beginning of season three, I think. But I had people who'd been working longer than me that were seasoned and were willing to train me. And even though I went to CalArts back then, there was teachers that had worked in TV, but most of the focus was feature. And also around the time I graduated was when all the feature animated studios in the States bottomed out. Like, that was around when Disney Feature was, like, selling their desks. A lot of my teachers my senior year were basically having to rethink their careers. It was not a good time.
Gosh.
Yeah. I know I said this on another friend's, like, podcast, like, recently, but we had teachers coming in and telling us straight out that there was no work for us and we needed to change careers now. I will say too, though, a lot of those teachers that said that are still working now. Like, they were able to transition and grow, and, you know, they're we're kind of in a slump right now, but overall, oh, my cat just rolled out of his beanbag chair. Oh my god!
Oh my god!
He's
so
fine.
Cute.
It was really funny, but he did the long stretch and just totally, like, rolled out like a log.
So cute.
Amazing. Yeah, but anyway, this isn't my first time going through, like, a weird work slump, but we can talk about that later. But yeah, so Titans was, like, my first job, and like Glenn Mirakami and Derek Wyatt and John Suzuki were very, like, giving with their time on showing me, like, how to do cleanup, how to do a character turn for TV, things that, very specific things that were not taught when I was at CalArts. Like, I definitely learned a lot in CalArts. Like, I don't regret my time there. Like, there's still things I learned, but it was definitely a springboard into being able to even do the TV job. And but yeah, I feel like Titans was definitely like an extension of like, I mean, I'm still learning every job I'm on. Like I learn something new every day on any show I'm on, really. But yeah, Titans was like very formative for me. And like, I know that like my drawings like definitely reflect that, you know, cause I was like taught like, well, this might not animate well, you know, like, or like we need to redesign something on this episode because we found out like the studio that this episode's going to, like they kind of struggle with like four-legged walks or like just learning like little inside baseball stuff like that.
Yeah. And that sounds very specific to the studio that was animating too.
Yeah, like it was interesting working with people who had worked on, you know, going back to like Batman animated series or earlier, you know, and like they have all this knowledge that they've had for years. And then you're getting this knowledge as you're working on their show. And I remember, I mean, I think since my brains were still extra spongy back then, I remember like a lot of stuff about that. And then, and like, it doesn't, those things I've learned don't necessarily apply to every show I worked on too. Like every show has its own different puzzle and, you know, the way that they do their productions. But, as far as that one, I did learn a lot of extra stuff that I don't think, you know, also I think the schedules were a little bit better back then. So there was definitely more time to train me up. And like recently I've been going through a lot of my old artwork and I found some of my old model sheets back then. And I just, woof, those were bad. Like I could, they definitely like took their time with me and, you know, and I'm very like grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause like I was a little, when I first graduated, I was a little upset. I was like, I don't feel ready for anything. And I just graduated. What the heck?
Yeah.
But, like, what I've discovered is like what you're saying is that like, you know, college is foundational. You won't know everything yet. You won't be your best artist self yet, but you are on your way. So you really do learn so much more when you're working with other people. And even if you don't have like a dedicated mentor, you get these little moments of mentorship along the way.
Yes.
And that's what you gather to create your craft and your process, you know? So I think it's amazing that they all like took time to like train you up and like give you insights that have, you know, you still use today when it's applicable. Right.
Yeah.
On the schedule thing though, cause it is nice to hear that they, you know, it wasn't like stressful to do that for you, but I feel like these days it feels like there's no time for mentorship sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
What has been your, you know, having been working for so long, what has been your kind of perception?
Well, I mean, I've only been working in like a director position, like full, you know, more in a full-time, you know, way since probably 2020.
That's yeah, only like, 2 years.
Yeah.
That's so much experience.
as full-time. And like, I mean, I directed my own pilots. And I mean, those I felt like I had like a pretty good time and handle on, but I also am aware that like directing on a pilot isn't the same as directing like on a full series. But one of the things that like I've run into is when you're a director, like you normally don't get to pick your own team. And I've been very fortunate with the board arts I've had, but when it comes to people who are greener, that's something I usually try to bring up early on a production. I'm like, you know, please give them time to get up to speed. You know, sometimes productions will listen to you on that. Sometimes they won't. So I think that's a pretty common struggle for a lot of people in like supervising positions. Cause it's like, you're managing other people and trying to keep them able to get their work in and trying to help them like hit whatever, you know, that show needs, you know, stylistically and, you know, all that fun jazz. But yeah, I really feel for like the greener people, especially the ones who've started in the past like 4 or 5 years. There is definitely less time to train people up. Like you basically need like, you, it's just tough. Like I don't think it's impossible. And like, I don't remember what the schedule was on the first show I worked on, but I know for sure that things have definitely gotten shorter. And like, I'll admit that there were late nights when on the first show I worked on too. Like, I remember us, which isn't good. I mean, it was like 20 years ago, but like, every once in a while there would be like, we would be there till 2 or 3 in the morning, like design. I remember one time we were like so tired and like, there was like, we had to draw like vignettes for like a flashback sequence. And we were so exhausted. It got to the point where we were like, somebody would draw like a few lines and just pass it to somebody else to draw a couple more lines. Like, I don't know if they remember that, but I do. And like, I mean, it was a fun time, but like, it's something I definitely would not want to have to repeat, you know? And like, yeah. I've worked as a board artist. I've been on shows where I definitely had to work weekends and work really late nights. And luckily, like, my health is okay, but I definitely wasn't taking care of myself as good as I should be. And, you know, the past 7 or 8 years, like, I've definitely been trying to, like, do better about that. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, speaking of, like, not having enough time, I try to be aware. Like, I know board artists always put in more time than what they say. But I try to at least let my board team know, like, let me know if there's anything I can, like, I'll take, if I have time, I will take stuff off your plate just so like I can make sure that I want you to have your weekends. Like, you should have your weekend, or like, you know, at least talk to production and see if we can get like some sort of overtime going on, or, you know, if there's somebody else that has free time to help out or whatever. And that's like something too, like, I think I mentioned it too. I mean, back when I did like some DC Nation pilots and stuff, but also like even recently, like the last show I directed on was on Santiago. I just made it very clear that like, if you need help, there's like no shame. Like, animation's already like, it's so much work. Mm-hmm. Like, if you need the help, just let me know. And then we'll get you help, or we'll figure out like what to do to make your job easier if we can. Cause you know, people have lives outside of work, I guess. But yeah, I know, yeah. I've been on some shows too, where it's like, you know, if you speak up that you need help, that's seen as a sign of weakness. I would say that's not the norm, but I have seen that sort of happen. So like, whenever I'm in a position to have some sort of a little bit of control over that, I just make that clear to my team to like, you need to let me know if you feel like you're falling behind, or if you just aren't getting the assignment and you just need like something else to help you out. Like, do not be ashamed to ask for help. Like, you know, at least let them know that, like, at least, you know, this show, like, please don't, you know, don't worry about that. That's not going to be how this is going to work out here. Can't promise that for other places, but I think that's just something that I think most people in like directing and supervising positions, like, you know, none of us want to like traumatize our own crew. So, anyway, sorry, I went a bit on a tangent there, but I guess that kind of ties into like schedules. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's hard to do when your schedule's short. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It feels like, sometimes you're thrown into the deep end when you start on a show. Cause like, usually you come in during production, not at the beginning. And like, a lot of roles kind of come on when they're needed. You're not just there waiting to start. Like, oh, we're going to have you start in like a week or two. And this is for you to like get up to speed. Like, no, day one, you're being launched on your board, you know?
So that's like something. Yeah. I've actually, most of the shows I've worked on, I've never been at the beginning of a show. I usually come on like a second or third season. Mm. So I think there's only been maybe one show where I was on at the very, very beginning, like maybe. So yeah, I don't know what that normal is, I guess. But I will say, usually when I start in like on a season 2 or season 3, like it's hectic, but at that point the shows usually have all their kinks worked out, or at least they're at least aware of what the issues are. So like, usually I just go in and just do what they need me to do, and just do it with what, you know, within the parameters I've been given.
What about the shows where like there are things that could be improved, but when you say that, everyone disagrees with you, and like the people who could actually do something about it? What do you do in those cases?
Okay, so that I've kind of like I've kind of learned to like realize that those are not my problems, even though it might be. If it's not my job, I try to be really mindful of like trying not to step on the supervisor's toes. Because that can get you into trouble too. Even if you're like, you were like, I know what could fix this. Nobody's doing it. I mean, there's ways you can like, you know, kind of pass along as being like, you know, it's just trying to be friendly or whatever and be like, oh, like, you know, something that we did on this other show that worked, we could try this. But it's not, if they don't want to take your suggestion, like that's not on you. I have an old friend from another outside of the US that works off and on stuff in the States. And she sometimes says in that situation, not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah.
And it sounds really mean, but I do find myself telling myself that a lot. Like, you know, if I'm on a show where like they're not planning reuse or they're not thinking ahead as far as like what's the studio they're sending this to, like, are they going to be able to animate this? You know, like, are we, you know, using incidentals properly, you know, just, I mean, I'm just throwing stuff out there, like just in general, but like, I've also been in positions too, where like, since I've worked for so long, sometimes like younger crew members will just go to me. Cause it's like they're struggling and they're not even part of like my team or anything, you know? And like, I'm not even working as a supervisor. Like I'm just working as like a designer or a board artist or something. This has happened on more than one show. I'm not specifying any of them, but I've had younger crew member come to me and like, I need help on this. Can you show me how to do this thing? And I really preface it with like, I can show you what I would do, but you really need to talk to your own supervisor about it because I might be giving you the wrong type of guidance or something that might not fit on the show. And like, I mean, not just protecting like the person talking to me, but also my own butt, because like, you know, sometimes people can see that as like, oh, you're encroaching on my job. So I try to really preface that with anybody who comes to me with help when I'm not in the supervising position and be like, well, this is what I've done in the past or what I would do. But like, you know, please check with like your supervisor or your director first to make sure that this is what they want. Normally you shouldn't have to feel like you're walking on, you know, you're walking on like eggshells, but I have been in positions where that's sort of been a thing. I know happens. You and I, yeah, like you and I were briefly talking before we were recording, but like there have been times when I've had to like tell myself, like, is my time better spent at a different production? Like, you know, or do they need somebody, like, am I not working as a fit? Maybe I need to free up space and go elsewhere, which sucks. And I think it's something that you definitely can't take lightly. But I think after years of experience, that's one thing that I have kind of learned is realizing, like, is this worth my time? Is this worth their time? Definitely, especially with, like, how, you know, jobs are kind of scarce right now, like, I wouldn't say it's, like, good advice, like, oh, you know, if it sucks, hit the bricks or whatever, but you know, everybody needs like to pay their rent and to eat food and stuff, but yeah, I think after working for a while, like, you do kind of like with experience, like, realize like, oh, what you might be a better fit for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's true. And so I wanted to circle back to, cause you gave us this huge preface, not to call you out. I do this with love. Okay. Uh-huh. You're like, I've only been directing since 2020 full time, but I also directed on a short but you've directed on multiple shorts and you were, you know, executive producer, you were producing those shorts too. So is there a time when you feel like, you're not, and, you know, correct me if you don't feel this way, but is there a time when you stop feeling like an imposter or having imposter syndrome?
I think for a lot of us, it's always kind of there in the background. And I struggle with that a lot, with like, am I keeping myself honest or am I just talking down on myself? And then some days I'm like, am I thinking too highly of myself? Like,
aww.
No, like, I mean,
to
me,
that's so much experience, and it's such unique experience too, especially with the development projects on top of your full-time directing experience.
It is. And I think also when you're the other thing too, when you're part of like a team, it's putting a whole show together. You're not the only voice. So sometimes, like, just because I'm like, well, this is how we did it, doesn't mean it's the only way. So I try to step back too, even if things are frustrating, and be like, well, this isn't how I would do it, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. Like, I need to just try to, like, you know, just let things be and see how they work out, I guess. But yeah, no, the imposter syndrome is always kind of there. It's even there, even when I'm working on my stuff outside of work, but like, I try to really focus on the parts of it that bring me joy. I will say that, like, I do enjoy working with like a team, and sometimes, like, even if a job is rough, just being able to like talk to my coworkers every day, even if it's only through Zoom, you know, or seeing their faces, like, that's enough sometimes just to keep me going, you know. Like, sometimes you're just like, well, this is kind of, you know, this situation isn't great, but at least I get to, like, you know, work and chat with so and so, you know. And also, like, you know, I don't think this is, like, for me, this isn't, like, always been, like, the case, but one of the things, too, if, like, if you're in a situation that isn't necessarily the best, like, that you can also use that as a learning experience. Like, you're like, okay, well, if I run into this in the future, here's, I know this could be a workaround or something, like, you know, learning from mistakes, I guess. But yeah, it's, I think overcoming imposter syndrome is kind of difficult. I think it's important, though, to focus on what you can do at the time. Like, you know, I don't know, just have to just get the job done at the end of the day sometimes, and just be like, well, I'm feeling this way, but this has to get done. So
true. Yeah, very true. Because, like, I also imagine that, like, you know, all the experiences that you have before becoming a director is why you become a director and what makes you such a good director. Because, like, the add-on is the additional context of, like, working within the, you know, the upper management, and then having to manage your teams, you know? So, like, that feels like it's probably, like, you know, in my mind, it's like half of what you need to do, and the rest is everything that you've come into the job with, you know? So, like, just, like, not giving, like, you know, like, I've only done this for this long feels like it's not needed, you know, because you should be proud of all of your experience and not ashamed to share it. Because I also feel that a lot of people, even though they hired you for your amazing experience and amazing talent, they will forget it in certain moments and treat you like you don't know what you're talking about, because they're under that, like, stress, I'm sure, you know. It's just something I think about a lot, because I feel like sometimes, like, I've worked on teams where, like, they forget that I'm not just, like, out of college, you know? It's like, you don't have to explain this to me. I know. I get it. Like, I know.
I have to try to remind myself, just sometimes it's okay just to keep my mouth shut, I guess, in those situations. But, well, you know.
You're probably right, though.
Well, yeah.
But, it depends on the situation, right?
Yeah, it does. Dang, I just had a thought and it kind of went away. But yes, there's been times where, like, you know, if I'm in a stressful situation, and I'm having someone above me that just you know, doesn't have time, I guess, to know, I guess. I'm trying to think, like, let me put it this way. I've been on shows where, like, people have not been aware of what I do on their own show. And I'm being like very broad. I would just say, like, you know, I know you said, like, oh, like, some people, like, my art's very, you know, you can tell, like, oh, that's something Brianne drew. That's not always the case when I'm working on a show. I also think there's, like, so many artists that, for, like, a showrunner or a supervisor, like, it's hard for sometimes for them to keep track of who did what. And there's been cases where I've been confused for other people, and that's caused some issues. Cause sometimes they're like, you know, I was on a show where they thought I was doing nothing, for 2 months. And that was kind of like really shocking because I was like busting my ass on that show, and it got all cleared up, but it was still like kind of like realizing that like, oh, you know, I can't just expect people to know what I'm doing. You shouldn't have to like, you know, toot your own horn on a production either. So I guess it's just something I try to like kind of be aware of. Like, I can't expect that people are keeping track of what I'm doing, but I need to keep track of myself at least. Like, I don't want to make anyone who hasn't worked in animation before be afraid of this, but sometimes like on some shows, I just try to keep a little like notebook and just say, oh, this is what I did today, you know, or I had a meeting with this person, or I worked from this time to this time. And that's actually helped me out in some situations. Also, like if I email somebody, you know, requesting something, I always try to make sure I have a copy of that. I've had to bring those up in the past too. Anyway, this stuff hasn't like, you know, it doesn't faze me as much as it used to. I'm just aware that sometimes, you know, some shows are just, I think over the years, like our TV shows have gotten like bigger in scope, like in scale, like the stories mm-hmm. we're telling, you know, the amount of designs, like how the level of board quality, and the schedules haven't really improved to fix that. So I kind of don't blame anybody higher up that can't keep track of that. Like there's so much going on. And I mean, that's something too, like I'm aware of, like, I don't know if I'll ever be like a showrunner or in a supervising position. Cause like, you know, above directing, but like, I can't really imagine what it would be like to have to, I mean, I'm aware of what you need to be tracking, but I don't know what that experience feels like, you know, like, you're not just keeping track of like what the design team's turning in. I mean, obviously you have like hopefully a design supervisor that's there to help you and you can rely on them and not feel like you're micromanaging. I think that's also, I've seen like some showrunners and I, like I said, like, I don't know what their experience is. I don't know what the heads at the studio are putting on them, but I think it's really easy to fall into the micromanaging trap. And like, sometimes you just need to like have a little bit of trust and faith in your own team. Like you can't have your hands on everything. But yeah, I think I've seen that sort of happen where like sometimes a showrunner will get really into the details of something and then they're kind of missing the bigger issues that might be happening. Also like, you know, sometimes like, you know, sometimes it's like some shows are just really understaffed or, you know, the schedule's kind of borked up. So yeah, I don't know.
You know, I feel like this is so interesting because I've had, you know, shades of similar situations where it's like there's a narrative going around about you that is a misunderstanding, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's tough and because everyone is stressed, even if they don't admit it, I feel like sometimes. And, you know, it can be really tough managing a whole team and the schedules. And then especially if you're talking to the network and the studio execs and then translating all that to your team and everything and trying to keep everyone optimistic and try to keep them from being stressed. So like everyone's dealing with stuff. And yeah, it's like, I don't know, because like I feel like we're very similar where like we have our feelings. And then we think about everyone else's feelings too, to calm our own feelings down, you know, it's like, this is BS, but I also know that everyone's dealing with their own shit too.
I think also like, this is something that I'm aware of. I know that there's been at least one production that has like called me like very difficult and also like the B word. For asking, yeah, I'm saying it here. I don't even know if those people realize that I know what my nicknames are.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'm just because I don't want to. Anyway, overall though, like most of the people I've worked with have been like really kind, and you know, I'm aware of how hard people are working, but like that particular situation, I remember getting it because I was asking what the schedule was, or like asking like, you know, I was concerned like, oh, this might, you know, I don't know if this is going to look good when it animates, like, and I was being told this from my other like male mentors that I'd worked with earlier. They're like, well, you need to like, just speak up and ask for this stuff. And that situation, like, you know, I mean, that was just part of that situation. But like, that was, there was like a year there where I was like trying to leave the industry after that. Cause I was like, if I can't even just do my job on a normal basis without having that sort of reputation, like, I don't know what to do, you know? You know, I had a lot, I felt very lost because I think I also tied a lot of my self-worth into my own artwork. And then hearing that, like, oh, we hate your art, we think it looks really bad. And then also just, you know, finding through mutual friends that they're like, oh, they're saying this about you too. And I'm like, I busted my ass on that. Why would I stay in this industry? Like, do I feel like I'm a part of this industry then? I guess I'm not part of this industry. I just like to do animation and I like to work on it if like people offer. Mm-hmm. So I, there was like a year where I didn't tell anybody I was looking for work. Or I wasn't really looking for work. I was like thinking about trying to go back into video games. I was like, maybe I just need to leave LA. But it was also like hard because my close friends are down here. Like, I didn't grow up in an area where there was like other people that were really into art and animation and being weirdly hyper focused on this stuff. But I was like, you know what, maybe I just need to go. And then I think it kind of got out, and then like one of my old coworkers from the first show, he was showrunning or supervising, I can't remember. He was showrunning like I think the second or third season of one of the Spider-Mans from like, you know, back then. So I came on as design, but like I kind of had to refigure myself out. I was kind of a mess, and then so I was doing design, and then I was doing design on that. So I was like, but I didn't really have a lot of faith in like my design capabilities. I still struggle with that still. Like, I don't know. I like drawing. I like coming up with designs, but working like as a designer on a show, like that's something I'm still kind of working through. Like, anyway, don't want to go on that tangent too much, but
That really blows my mind that you've been working for so long. You have so many character design credits, so many storyboard credits, and you've done so much in your personal art, and you've made comics, and you've done these shorts that you've developed, and that you still feel this way sometimes.
Like, I mean, it's gotten better. Like,
that's good.
Yeah. And I know I've chatted about this before, but yeah, I worked on that one Spider-Man for about almost a year. I was still really struggling. And then, some of my friends that were running Dumb Comics, they actually asked me, like, Dumb Comics, I don't think the site exists anymore, but there was a lot of industry people who just did comics for fun. They would upload one. Everybody had like a specific day they uploaded their own comic on, but they had a slot that was open, and they originally asked me when they first started the site. And back then I was like, I never done comics before. I hadn't even done storyboards at that point either. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I just draw silly drawings. I don't know how to do comics. But yeah, back when I was like still kind of like basically regrowing my brain for drawing, they had asked me to like take over a slot, and then I was just like, I don't know if I really want to put myself out there. And then Katie Rice sent me a really sweet email that because my webcomic, before it was a webcomic, it was something I actually pitched around to different animation studios. And it never really went anywhere. Like, it had some interest, but it wasn't really, you know, it was a little bit before its time. Like, not, like, as far as, like, having a girl lead or having any fantasy stuff. Like, it was before all that stuff really took off in the mid-2010s. Mm-hmm. It was back when they were like, well, that's unproven, we can't do that. Anyway, she sent me a nice email and was just like, I think it's time for like the world to see Harpy or something. Like, I need to find it. But it was like, it was very sweet and supportive. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll try it, you know? And then they're like, okay, great. Like, you know, you take over Monday on January 6th or whatever, which is awful. Cause that, you know, that date
relies on something else now. Has a different connotation now.
Yeah.
I do prefer to think of it as the Harpy G day. So.
Yeah. So they're like, yeah, you get, starting on January 6th, you every Monday after, you get Harpy. And it was like kind of intimidating because like some of the commenters on Dumb Comics were like super toxic, but it kind of learned. Yeah, I know. And sometimes every once in a while I'll see one of those old timers comment like on my current site, and I'll be like, I remember you, I know who you are, I know what but you are.
Clearly, they really love your work that they're still it's looking.
No, it's so fine. I don't, yeah.
That's the compliment there.
Yeah. So I end up like starting my comic. And like, I remember the first 6 months I kept trying to quit because it was just very intimidating. Like, talking about putting yourself out there. For some reason, mm-hmm. I think that was probably around the time when I realized that, like, oh, there's lots of people reading this. Oh my God, I've never written like an actual story like this and put it out there. Like, oh, it's that whole, like, what's that thing? Like, desire to not be known or whatever. I'm not saying that quote right. Oh God.
Yeah. I have a similar feeling where it's like, cause I'm an extroverted introvert. So like, I want to be invisible and I don't want anyone knowing anything about me, yet I will like word vomit my entire history to you as long as I know you don't want to know, you know? So I get that feeling. It's like, you want to be out there, but at the same time you want your privacy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the comic overall had a pretty good response. Like, I wouldn't say by webcomic standards, it's like super popular or anything, but it's stable, I guess. Like, I still have longtime readers, and it's really, I don't know, it's just very validating and really cool to be like a story point or something that I was foreshadowing like during chapter one. And like, the comic turns 10 years next year.
Oh, that's incredible.
Having people follow it enough that they're picking up on stuff and being like, oh wow, that was like, I don't know, it's just kind of really cool to see, you know, people relating to the characters and stuff. Like, I know when I was doing the Amethyst shorts, because we were in development for series briefly on that, for actually full series, and I remember one of the characters having like a specific quirk, and then an exec telling me like, nobody wants, that's dumb, that doesn't make sense, nobody wants to see that. And then I kind of like, one of the characters in my comic has something similar going on with it, or personality wise going on with them. And like, that's one of the most popular characters in my comic that everyone latches onto. So it's been kind of like nice that way. Cause I think when we work in, if you work in like TV animation as a job, you know, we focus test a lot. There's a lot of things that like studios are kind of afraid to touch because it's a risk, or they consider it a big risk cause no one else has done it. And then you kind of like, it's really easy for you to believe that too. The longer you work, where you're like, well, we can't do that. Like, no one's going to watch this or whatever. But then doing it on a comic and then having people be like, I love this. This is the shit I like. And you're like, oh, we would have been fine if this thing would have gone and they would have let me do that one thing. So I guess that is like getting a little bit of self-confidence back. I also have to say, like, even when I was doing my comic early on, I was still kind of like mentally kind of in like a weird spot. And then there was one day where Derek Wyatt actually texted me and he's like, hey, like, you know, we have 3 months left on this current Ben 10. We have people rolling off, but we have design position open. Maybe you should come over here and it might be good for you to be around friends for a while, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I went over and worked on, I forgot, was it Omniverse? I feel so bad. Like, I'm just so... You know, when you're talking, you're like, oh shit, names, like, what are the names of things? It was the one that,
I think that's right.
Yeah, that was the one Matt Youngberg was show running on. So I was there for a few months and I was still kind of like a mess, but it was nice to be. Also, it was like, you know, drawing in a style I was more familiar with, and kind of getting the hang of it. And then I think that was around the time, Pig Goat Banana Cricket was about to start up, and I took a board test because one of the directors over there had worked with me before and really wanted me to apply. And I took the board test, and I hadn't really worked professionally as a board artist at that point. The only boards I had done professionally was, I think at that point I had boarded the first episode of Amethyst, and then I had friends who boarded the other ones and they did a much better job because they are natural board artists. And then I also boarded one of the SBFF shorts for Lauren, and then I boarded two of the Titans, new Teen Titans before it was Titans Go. I boarded two of those shorts on top of designing on those. But the thing was, I had boarded on paper. I hadn't boarded in Storyboard Pro yet, and so it was like more old school boards. And also, I take it back. I forgot I boarded for a year on Brave and the Bold. That was actually my first board job, and that was like before all the DC Nation stuff. And that was the one I actually cut my teeth on and learned. And like also my director was, on that was Michael Chang. And he was really, understanding with his time and stuff. And I'm still grateful for that. I was not a good board artist on that show, but I think it was enough for them to be usable at least. Anyway, I did the board test for Pig Goat. I got it. And then I think the scripts were late for the first 2 weeks, so it gave me time to actually learn Storyboard Pro. And I think that's the show that I think where everything really started clicking for me on how boards work. So I stayed on that show for 2 years, and the crew was great. I actually really loved working with that crew. Schedule-wise, that show was very tough. Like, I probably didn't take care of myself as well health-wise, like, physically on that show as I should have. And I think I'm, you know, I'm still, like, okay, but I feel like I couldn't do that again. I think that was the last show I could do late nights on, too. I've never, I mean, all-nighters. Let's say all-nighters. Like, I can do late nights if I have to, but then you pay for it, so.
Right, yeah, it adds up. Our body keeps the count or toll or something. I forget the quotes. We're checking the quotes here.
Yeah, and I think I was 35 when I worked on Pig Goat, and I remember all through my 20s, everyone was telling me, like, once you hit 30s, you can't do all-nighters anymore. Once you hit 30. So I tapped out at 35. I physically can't do an all-nighter anymore after that show. Although I think sounds bad. I think there actually was a few all-nighters during 2020. There was no way around it on that one.
It was a hard time.
Yeah, which isn't good, but it still happens and it shouldn't happen. But
yeah, because it really shouldn't be expected for us to do all-nighters. No. I know that a lot of people, or I know of a lot of people who will do all-nighters, like maybe they just didn't have a productive day, so that like they ended up spending more time to meet their deadline, because at the end of the day, as long as we meet our deadlines, it kind of, like, in quotes, it kind of doesn't matter how long it takes to do something, as long as you meet your goals.
Yeah, and I understand that too. Like, sometimes, like, you know, you just have a day where you just can't, you know, get anything done, so you have to make it up in other ways. But I think it's bad when you're doing all-nighters because the scripts are way too long, you're the only board artist on a team, or there's no revisionists available. Like, yeah, that's things when things seem, are like, that's not like, good.
Avoidable. Like, if production would,
I will, call them out. Yeah, I will say though, like, I think I have never had to do an all-nighter since 2020. Like, knock on wood, but every production I've been on since then, like, you know, we've been busy, you know, there's always something that could be run better, but that's the case with everything. But overall, like, I had downtime. I had my weekends. Like, I had a little bit of time to at least, like, catch a breath, you know, or like I was able to clock out and actually go have dinner and like turn off the computer rest of the day and stuff like that. So, and I'm grateful for that, but I appreciate when productions are able to have it set up like that. Like, it should be, but, you know, going back to, like, you know, I don't know what was going on above me, but, like, sometimes there's just things, you know, you don't know what's, you know, what people are having to deal with or work with above. Like, some things can snowball really easily in animation too, you know, like, there's usually wiggle room, like, budget and schedule built in normally, but, you know, sometimes there's just like a perfect master storm that happens, and it just, you know, causes a chain reaction.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, what has it been like? Because you mentioned that you were like this baby in the industry when you first started out, and everyone was like, you know, giving you their time and help and trying to help you along and help you grow. And you've been mentored by so many people in small ways and big ways through the years. But, like, what has it been like to become more senior and be the one mentoring others?
I still feel like a baby. I still feel like I have a lot left to learn. I guess if anything, like, if anyone comes to me, at least I can be like, you know, giving them ideas of other options to, like, help with other problems that they might be dealing with, like, or struggling with, you know. I guess if anything, I guess the fact that, like, I've been able to make a living at this for so long, it's like, I know right now, particularly, like, you know, a lot of people are very afraid with the state of our industry, and, like, I don't think those fears are not, like, they're not justified. Like, it definitely is kind of scary. I don't think animation is going to be going anywhere. I think I've seen it in much dire straits than now. But I guess like learning to be flexible, you know, like mm-hmm. if you need a job, don't feel like you can only take animation jobs. There's nothing wrong with taking something outside. But I guess like, you know, like, you know, I guess going back as an example, like, you know, like having, I was a designer on a show and I had a board artist come to me and they were struggling with figuring out how to get like one of their shots to be more three-dimensional. Like it's a drawn, hand-drawn show, but they're still trying to figure out how to like not have the staging be so flat, you know? And then I had to show them how to like, you know, draw out a grid or whatever. But then I also had to tell them like, please go talk to your director about this first. Like, I don't, you know, I don't want to be seen as like stepping on their toes or taking over their job or something. Cause like, you know, but it was one of those cases where that director was really busy putting out like another fire or something. And that board artist just didn't, they felt like they needed help right now. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess like as somebody who's been working longer, I guess like as an everyday case, like stuff like that, you know, like, which, you know, is similar to like when I started out, you know, talking to like a director or a board artist who's worked for a while, or, you know, my art director or something. And they'd be like, oh yeah, like I had this problem on this show and this is how we handled it, you know? So I'm just passing on any knowledge that I was given that I can remember before I forget it.
Yeah. No, that's great. And that's why I'm glad you came on the podcast. This was part one of my conversation with Brianne. Part two will be out in a couple of days, so check back for the rest. And thanks for listening. Ink and Paint Folk is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. This episode was produced by me, Cassie Soliday. Music by Dominique Parker. Edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.